Podcast 1, is a salesperson irrelevant?
Hi, I'm Sharon Drew Morgan, and this is part 1 of a 3-part podcast series on how our old sales models no longer work in today's economy, and how acquiring new buying facilitation skills and skills to help buyers navigate through their buying journey are necessary to get more buyers actually buying. So let me start with a few questions. What is actually new about the buying climate that's affecting your sales specifically? Think about it for a minute. And then figure out what was different, what's different about this than was true, I don't know, let's say 3 years ago. How much of this difference is about the way buyers are approaching a solution and or the way they go about their internal behind-the-scenes decision issues that they have to figure out without us? Do you know the point in a buyer's decision process that they actually go online to seek information? And is there other material that you could be offering at other points in the buying decision process that you're not aware of and that you haven't offered until now? Here's an important one for me. Is a buyer's route to their buying decision different because they can easily attain the data that they need or the click they need to make the actual purchase? And does your solution data drive the buyer's internal decision points? I'm not sure it does, actually, but let's take a look as we go forward. Let's start by considering the new buying climate. And there are several obvious and not so obvious problems here. The first point is the economy. Folks are risk averse, we know that, and they're spending money really slowly. This is all exacerbated by the fact that there are now more stakeholders on buying decision teams, and therefore more people that need to buy into any expenditure. This is also exacerbated by the ability of our video cams now to have folks work and decide together remotely, actually across nations and across miles and across offices. So getting into a meeting with folks to make a buying decision takes a lot longer to even set up to begin with, because you've got to take time zones into account and schedules and so forth. The next point is the amount of data available on the net. This is depreciating our role as purveyors of knowledge. But because sellers have managed the needs analysis and solution placement end of the buying decision so well, they have historically been secure in their ability to understand buyers' needs and do a great job presenting solutions. And now, because buyers can access their own data and probably understand their own problems, and there's so many different types of solutions available that they haven't considered before, a large part of our job is being taken away from us. As a result of all this, over 50% of sales folks are not even meeting their quotas. But this isn't the fault of us, because we're terrific. It's actually a problem with the sales model itself. Let's stop for a minute and figure out what the sales model is all about, and then see what it is about the sales model that's making it even harder to close in today's business environment. First of all, and this is really important to understand and think about for just a moment, sales has been a needs assessment and solution placement model. I'm going to say that again because it's really important. Sales has been a needs assessment and solution placement model. And it assumes that a prospect is someone whose needs match our solution. We're then armed with the capability to understand exactly what a need looks like in lots of different situations, and then to explain comprehensively and very professionally, I might add, how our solution would resolve that problem. Historically, buyers have actually needed sales folks to explain our solutions and how it would fit with and resolve their problems. But they don't so much anymore, do they? The other issue is that the sales model has actually ignored the behind-the-scenes private issues that buying decision teams have to manage without us, offline, privately, uniquely, and sometimes in a crazy way, before they can even decide to make a change, or decide to bring in something new, or get the agreement and buy-in that everyone has to give before they can choose a solution and a vendor. They just can't bring in a new solution if the two department heads aren't going to be talking, or if the old vendor that they love can bring in a part of the solution. They're not going to want us to do the whole thing and take the business away from the person they love. We're going to be discussing this in a whole podcast the next time, so let's just recognize that there's something going on internally to the customer that we've never been privy to, that they need to address offline, without us, privately, politically, before they can buy, and that the sales model per se has not in any way influenced or managed that. As a result of this offline private stuff buyers have to do, we've historically had to wait while they've accomplished this buy-in and gotten the right funding and the agreements and the relationships, the politics. But even that was okay because there's a 7% close rate built into sales as an indicator of success. So even with all this problem, we were still able to manage enough success to make our companies and our pockets happy. But this isn't enough anymore, and it's insufficient for today's buyer because we're not even reaching our 7% rate. Not to mention it's taking far longer to close with all the stakeholders, and buyers aren't even connecting with us as frequently as they used to because they're doing a lot of the problem-solving and information-gathering without us at whatever point they go online to learn about whatever they need to learn about. So we're focusing on tracking clicks and metrics and providing solution data and offering online papers and podcasts and webinars. But we're spending far too little time actually helping our buyers manage their non-need-related private buying journey. We're spending far too much time on solution data, the very last phase of the buying decision, and not nearly enough time helping buyers figure out how to get this private, internal agreement for a purchase. Obviously, your buyers are the ones that ultimately have to know if our solution fits their needs. But this is the very last thing that they need before they make a purchase. As sellers, we've been led to believe that once we see a need that our solution can resolve, it's a given that we have a prospect. But of course, that's not true, or we'd be closing a lot more business. And as I said, it's been the accepted norm. So we have mistakenly, I think, gone forth gathering and pitching data at the wrong point in the buyer's decision journey. Think of a house purchase. The very last thing you need is the information about the house. First, you and your family need to decide to move. And you all might have some really interesting conversations about that and some arguments about who wants what. So somehow you all have to figure out your criteria. Is it neighborhood first or school district? Travel time to work? Affordable price? Size? Backyard? It's only when all of the purchasing criteria are lined up that the buyer will know, that you will know, what kind of a house to look for, where we're going to look, and so forth. Think about losing weight, a little closer to home maybe. Needing to know about the membership prices for a gym is the last thing we would need. First, we would need to decide to be a healthy person and decide to change our eating habits and decide to change our schedule. It might even involve getting our spouse to wake up at 5:30 in the morning to walk the dog. But it's only when we figure that out do we need to know the gym prices. And even if we did know the gym prices beforehand, and we knew the kind of house we liked beforehand, We would still need to get the internal issues managed, the family to buy in, our spouse to agree to walk the dog, before we could actually take action. The space between the need and solution and the actual purchase is getting wider in today's business climate. So sure, we can understand the need and sure, we can have the solution. But the time and ability for the buyer to actually press that button to say, yeah, they're going to buy, is taking longer because of all the decision issues that are going on now internally. We're ignoring a very valuable asset, actually, as sellers. We could actually be involved with a buyer's decision-making journey far earlier than we ever have. And not even focus on the solution data that they no longer need us for. So let them keep doing what they're doing with the clicks and make our sites available for them to use easily. But let's take on a new job to enter the process earlier. Think about this for a moment. Like the examples of buying a house and losing weight. Before any purchase gets made, there's an unknown number of internal, private, behind-the-scenes decision issues that really have to be resolved. I know that sales doesn't go here, and we're going to talk about this in the whole next podcast, as I said. But make no mistake, until or unless every one of these issues is dealt with, the status quo is going to prevail regardless of the problem or how much they need us. Because the status quo has been good enough until now, hasn't it? And it's far easier to maintain that than going through whatever change is going to happen to adopt something new. A purchase is actually a change management issue. And our new job is going to be a decision facilitator to help buyers manage the change they'll experience as they consider purchasing our solution. And again, this is part of podcast two. I'm just teasing you a little bit here. We've never had this capability before in sales. But now, with the conventional thrust of sales being shifted, just the very nature of sales shifting, we've got to add this new capability to gain back our ability to have influence. Influence that was given to us before because we were so capable of understanding how our solution could manage a need and our ability to explain how our solution fit with them, but now is pretty much irrelevant. Sales as we've known it is just not enough anymore. Imagine adding the capability to help buyers navigate through their decision issues. Is it sales? Well, no. It's change management. It's what buyers must do anyway before they can buy. They're going to do it with us or without us. So it might as well be with us. So let's realize that our sales job actually has to expand to include helping buyers make their internal buying decisions, which is not sales. It's a decision navigation system we're going to talk about. But it's going to be expanding our job, giving us new sales, and closing a lot more sales than we've done before. Here are the problems I've discussed. The sales model has focused on needs analysis and solution placement, and buyers don't need to do that. Buyers don't need us to do that for them anymore. Buyers face internal buy-in issues from an elevated number of stakeholders that have to agree to the purchase, and they don't know how to efficiently do that. And salespeople have to expand their jobs to help buyers manage their internal change management issues and get onto the buying decision team immediately rather than sit and wait for the buyers to do that without them. On our next podcast, we're going to look at what's actually going on within the buyer's decision-making system. Following that, we're going to talk about how buying facilitation can help you get on the buying decision team and help you help buyers navigate through all their buying decision issues from the inside. Thanks. Hi, this is Sharon Drew Morgan. If you'd like to learn more, take a look at my site, www.newsalesparadigm.com. If you'd like to read two chapters of Dirty Little Secrets, go to www.dirtylittlesecretsbook.com. And I think you'll like my new book. It's all about this topic and how we can actually help buyers buy using their own buying decision journey. You can contact me at SharonDrew@newsalesparadigm.com. Thanks for your interest. I look forward to speaking.
Podcast 2, The Buyer's Buying Journey.
Hello, my name is Sharon Drew Morgan, and I'm the developer of buying facilitation. I'm also the author of the New York Times Business Bestseller, Selling with Integrity, and the Amazon Bestseller, Dirty Little Secrets. Let's have a good look around at what's going on with the buyer's decision-making journey this podcast. Let's separate out the buying decision journey from the solution choice, because one is based on need and solution, and we're familiar with that, and one is based on whatever is going on behind the scenes in the buyer's culture, stuff that's unique to them and we'll never be a part of because we don't live there with them. We don't understand those historic relationships or the internal politics. But make no mistake, until or unless the buyer handles all this stuff, they will not make a purchase. We've never addressed this before, preferring instead to wait while the buyers take care of this on their own, calling them stupid sometimes along the way, because we don't understand why they don't buy if we think they have a need that we can resolve. But we've been totally in the dark when they did this. We just kind of sit and wait. And as a result, we've closed a fraction of the sales we should have closed, and we lose a lot of our sales with whatever's going on behind the scenes that we're not aware of and we've had no control over. One of the larger problems is that we've assumed that because we've uncovered a need that our solution can resolve, that we have a prospect. And rather than help them navigate through their private, unique, and often utterly insane issues that they must handle behind the scenes, we've chosen to focus on placing a solution and letting the buyer handle this offline stuff that they have to do. I mean, they just have to do it. It's absolutely necessary because they can't get into trouble with the department head when they don't want to take our solution, the solution choices we're considering as buyers, or the tech team wants to get involved and we don't want them around. To help you separate the differences between the need and the solution, which is what we've done, and the buying decision issues, I have an analogy for you. Have you ever had to, say, lose 10 pounds, maybe spend more time exercising than you do now? Let's say you've got a little bit of a gut on you and you've been walking around with that for, I don't know, a year, and almost never exercise, though you promise yourself you will. And let's say I'm a salesperson at the local gym, and I can offer you a new membership with a discount. What are the odds of me signing you up? Well, nil. Why? Here are the facts we know. You seem to have a need, and I seem to have the right solution. You haven't seen the need to be fitter until now, so you've maintained your status quo. And you most likely have designed some workarounds that maintain your situation. You've bought larger clothes. You're used to eating differently, let's say one extra slice of pizza. You do less exercise or take the car more often. Here's what we don't know. One, what are your beliefs that have made it possible to maintain your current level of fitness or non-fitness? Two, what would you need to know or believe differently in order to make fitness a priority? Because until you make it a priority, the gym doesn't matter. Three, what are the family schedules or human issues that make it easy for you to maintain your fitness level? Your spouse overweight, your family don't mind what you look like or feel like or act like? Because if they do, you might not be able to maintain that. We don't know. Four, what sort of buy-in would you need to get from your family or your work in order to have the time to go to the gym? Five, what would you need to be different for you in order to have access to healthier food to help you become more responsible about your weight gain or loss or your food habits? And six, What has stopped you until now from choosing to be a fitter or a healthier person? 7, what would you need to believe differently to make a commitment at this time to be a healthier person? It's not likely that a person who has maintained a certain lifestyle is willing to change without a belief change of some sort. The lifestyle contains certain food choices, time choices, family scheduling choices, and until those are shifted, the gym doesn't matter. In other words, it's not about the gym. And until this person makes a new sort of internal choice, they're not a prospect. Our prospects go through the same sorts of internal things before they buy. Are you getting the point that just because there was a need and you have the proper solution doesn't mean you have a prospect? I have a question. Do you think a buyer knows at the start of their purchasing journey everyone who must buy in, who must be consulted, who must do something that involves some sort of change, or who must agree, or who they have to hire or fire as a result of bringing in your solution? Do you think a buyer knows at the start of their purchasing journey everyone who must buy in, or who must be consulted, or who must do something that involves some sort of change, or who must agree with you, or who understands they have to fire someone or hire someone as a result of bringing in your solution? Of course not. The implications of a purchase or any sort of change cannot be understood at the beginning of the buyer's journey. But before a buyer can make a purchase, they may need to make sure that their environment will not face some sort of chaos when they bring in your solution. So all the areas that touch the buyer's problem must agree to making this purchase before the purchase gets made. And as I've said, the buying decision issues have nothing whatsoever to do with need. They are political or relational or historic. Let me give you an example that's going to show you the whole problem and how when I use buying facilitation, my decision facilitation material, at the front end, managed the problem, saved me a hell of a lot of time, and taught the buyer how to buy. I got a call from the largest bank in Europe recently. The head of commercial banking called to ask if I could create a buying decision front end to a large IT system they're developing to help their buyers make buying choices. I'm going to relate the whole prospecting experience here, as it'll show you how I was able to manage the buyer's experience from the telephone, save myself a heck of a lot of travel time, and truly serve the buyer. And I got onto the buying decision team within minutes of the call. Notice that I didn't gather data about their need or attempt to place my solution. That was the last thing to be done. In fact, I still haven't done it, and I'm well on the path to helping them greatly, but in a different way than I had originally planned. You'll see. Instead, I led them through the buying decision issues, and he figured out what he and his team would have to manage prior to being ready, willing, or able to make a purchase. And this whole discussion started with my very first comment to him. Listen to how this plays out and compare this to what you might have done if you were going to start by doing some sort of relationship building or needs analysis, rather than what I did as I started immediately to help him figure out how to fix the problem themselves and then helped him get the right decision makers together to move forward. Because until or unless they did all this, they couldn't buy from me anyway. So here's the conversation. The man said, let's call him Joe. We're interested in having you add some decision facilitation capability to the front end of a large customer service system we're developing. Can you do that for us? Sharon Drew. Sure, but I have a question first. What's stopping your tech team from developing this on their own? Joe. They do want to develop this on their own. In fact, they've already purchased a bunch of your books, and they're studying them to see how much they can do without you. Sharon Drew. So how will you and your buying decision team know that using material I've developed will give them additional value different from what the tech guys are going to get from my books. Joe, well, that's the problem, isn't it? I know that they can't learn the material in full without you, but they're convinced they can, and they're trying to convince our team that they don't need you. And of course, the team would like to believe them because it would save us time and money. Sharon Drew, so how will you and the buying decision team know that what I offer personally would give you an additional capability over what the tech team can get from my books? Joe, how about if we set up a conference call for the team? Sharon Drew, and how will you choose the team members to be on the call? Joe said, well, the head of technology has to be on the team, and probably the head of training and internal consulting. I think that should be it. And I said, well, has there ever been a time when the bank has done something similar for buyers before now? Joe said, oh, yeah. The retail banking side tried something like this a few years ago, but they failed miserably. Do you think we need to include him in the group also? I said, of course. But people are going to be comparing you and assuming you're going to fail like he did because he's in a very similar position you're in. Why don't we get him on board so he can give us his ideas and we can avoid mistakes? And then, so he agreed, and he said that we'd set up a time to meet 4 days later. So he put together all these big players of this very large bank. It was the head of training, the head of consulting, the head of retail banking, the head of commercial banking, and the head of technology. 4 days later, we're all on this conference call, and I hadn't met them yet. I still had no idea really what their needs were, and I had never discussed my solution. A few minutes into the call, the CEO of the bank got on the phone, and he said, I saw all of you big players on a conference call, and since you all work for me, I thought I'd better get online and see what kind of trouble you're getting into. This guy proceeded to shoot down every idea we came up with. He would say, oh, we tried that. That doesn't work. I was able to guide the whole team down a new path of decision-making around his comments. So if he would say something like, X didn't work before now, and I'm not going to let you move forward if you're going to do that, I would say, so what we have to do before we begin is figure out how to make this change and make sure that X is covered and we can do it with Y. We did this throughout the call. I proceeded to facilitate all their decision issues, which had nothing to do, really, with their need or my solution, but everything to do with their internal agreement to buy in, to get the buy-in for a change of this size. After the meeting, after this telephone meeting, I was included in all of the emails for the next 2 months that it was discussed. I was on the buying decision team. And toward the end, it was obvious that they wanted to break up their solution into segments and use the tech team for the first segment and then bring me in after a year's trial. So now I'm on the budget for next year, and I'll be going out there to finally meet with them. And I've never discussed my solution or my price, but I'm on the buying decision team already. I've proven myself to be someone they want to work with and whom they trust. I have helped them make their major decisions separate from my solution. If I had tried telling them that the tech guys couldn't reproduce my material I only make a small fraction of it available in my books, which is true, I would have lost my consulting service, my real relationship manager trusted advisor service, and lost credibility. Could the tech team do my stuff without me? Absolutely not. But the tech team is right there with them, and they can talk together all the time, and if the tech team convinces them they can do it, it's not going to matter what I say. I'm here. They're already insiders. And I did get what was mine. And the buyer would have gone forth choosing their tech team anyway and not have included me, and I wouldn't have gotten that one portion that was mine. I've put in about 2 hours of time, far different than the huge amount I would have put in if I had flown out there, spent a couple of days gathering data and finding out who they were and making nicey-nicey and then putting together a proposal. Now, I don't need a proposal, and they've already bought me. And you know what? If I wasn't involved with that team that way, the CEO would never have allowed that to move forward because he had so many no's in the whole project that until I repositioned it for them to think about differently, it would have been a no-go. We are so focused on understanding needs and placing solutions that we're not involved in the buying journey, which has absolutely nothing to do with the need or our solution until the very end of the decision-making. There is an internal buying decision team that handles these decisions, and we are not getting on it. We do not know what internal politics are coming up for them, or who is fighting with who, or when a beloved vendor shows up to sell in our space. We've never known how to help buyers impact these issues before now, and we've sat and waited, and we've lost a lot of sales. And unfortunately, we can never understand what the heck is going on with them because we don't live there. Even if we ask them questions, not only will they only give us a fraction of the real data, but they don't even know the whole thing till they're in the middle of their mess of figuring it out. Some of the issues that buyers have to face before they can buy include people, policies, politics, rules, relationships, familiar vendor relationships, partner relationships, personal relationships, interdepartmental relationships, initiatives, budgets. The other thing that's vital for the prospect to explore are all the different ways they can fix their own problem with a familiar solution. Remember, the buyer only wants to resolve a business problem, not to find an untried solution that they have to get everyone to use or buy into. The last thing they want to do is bring in a new solution or a vendor, and as that will create all kinds of disruption for them. So before you start gathering information about needs or discussing how your solution will fit, remember that buyers have a very necessary journey through all of the elements within their environment that must buy in to bringing in a new solution. At least a portion of your sales job is now being co-opted by the internet. We've been focusing on solution placement and needs analysis forever in our sales fields, our sales jobs, and the internet can do this. So we need a new job. We need something that buyers need us for. Learn some of the new facilitation skills that I'm offering to help buyers through their buying decision journey. And then you can be a true servant leader and trusted advisor, and they'll put you on the buying decision team on their first call. It'll also help you discover who is a real buyer. And then you can get rid of the people who are tire kickers and who will never buy, and you'll know that on the first call. As you go down the journey with them, you'll have some say in how decisions get made, and it will be obvious to everyone if they can buy, how they're going to buy, when they're going to buy, and who they're going to buy from. You'll turn some of them into buyers who wouldn't have even bought, and some who you would have sworn would buy will never buy. You'll end up discovering that much later on anyway, after you spend a lot of time offering your solution and following up. But you want to find out up front, don't you? The real question is, would you rather sell or have someone buy? Today, your sales job is being taken over by the internet, your prices are comparable to your competitors, and you sit and wait for sales to come in with little capability of exhibiting real control of what's going on behind the scenes. Buying facilitation can actually help you manage the buyer's journey from the inside. Next podcast, we'll be talking about buying facilitation, why sales must change, and how.
Podcast 3, how sales must change to remain indispensable.
Hi, my name is Sharon Drew Morgan, and I'm the developer of buying facilitation and the author of the New York Times bestseller, Selling with Integrity, and the Amazon bestseller, Dirty Little Secrets. Sales has been about needs assessment and solution placement. We've adjusted to the results we get from that, but let's face it, it doesn't really work very well, or we would be closing a hell of a lot more than the 10% close rate we've been getting and we've been calling success. But we've convinced ourselves that it's a successful model because that's as good as we get. Because I kind of think this sales model is broken. There's so much that's going on behind the scenes that we're not addressing, behind the scenes in the buyer's buying decision journey. But we could be. And now with the advent of technology taking over so much of our sales job, it's making it even harder for us to close. But you know what? It's always been possible for us to have a much higher close rate. In fact, we're actually minimizing a high percentage of closing possibilities because we're limiting our focus. We totally leave clients on their own to manage the internal and political variables that they have to address behind the scenes, of course, on their way to a purchasing decision. And we're giving up a huge opportunity to influence them because we merely focus on the needs assessment and solution placement. Not to mention that technology is now taking over so much of our job that if we continue this focus, we'll go the way of newspapers. Here's an example of something that happened to a client of mine, but easily could have happened to you. My client sold a relatively inexpensive, just-in-time software solution. A local university had been trialing it for about 11 months, and they knew the price after the second week, and they had had three trials, so they knew the functionality in the fifth. I mean, if they didn't like it, they wouldn't have liked it after the first week or the first trial. But they called when I was there to say thanks, but no thanks. Well, think about it. Obviously, it wasn't a price problem or a functionality problem. They knew that. And the buyer was in an executive position. So what was the problem? Some salespeople I know said they would have called to offer a better price, but that wasn't the problem. So I called on my client's behalf, and here was our conversation. And the woman answered, and I said to her, "I hear you weren't able to purchase our solution. You must have been so disappointed." And she said, "I am. Your solution is terrific. I love it. I'm really disappointed." And I said, "Well, what stopped you from being able to buy it?" And she said, "We have a new HR director who would be my business partner on this, and he's such a contentious person that I get a migraine every time I have a meeting with him. So I decided to limit my exposure and take care of my health and disregard any reason for us to work together. Unfortunately, that included purchasing your solution." So I said to her, "So I hear that in this instance, to maintain your personal integrity, you had to put your personal feelings in front of any business decision you might have needed to make." And she said, "Oh, man, yeah, I guess I did that. That sounds really awful, doesn't it?" And I said, "So what would you need to know to have the skills and willingness to find a way to communicate with him in a way that would not risk your health, but make it possible to work together well enough to help your employees have the tools they need?" She said, "Oh, let me think about this and I'll get back to you." A few hours later, she sent me an email asking me for some of those great questions you asked me. So I sent her a few, some for her to figure out how she could communicate with him and not kill either one of them, and some for her to help the two of them decide how to choose a solution for the university. 2 weeks later, she called back and purchased a solution. Obviously, the problem there had nothing to do with her solution or her need. And no matter how well we understood her problem or knew the decision makers, the sales model just wasn't going to help with that problem. So we've ignored this political stuff that we haven't ever been privy to. We're not there when there's a fight between teams or a big meeting or the department heads make the decisions for next year or when the department hires an old vendor. We're just not there. This is where we lose our sales. Not because of the buyer's need or our solution, We lose our sales when the buyer's decision team is unable to figure out how to get the buy-in to even consider making a change. Given that technology is taking over so much of our needs assessment and solution description tasks, here's an area of the buying decision journey that we can enter as a true value add. We can make ourselves highly relevant and let the internet do its job. By that time, we'll already be on the buying decision team and embedded within the buyer's solution journey. But it's a new concept for some of us. And the question I have for you is, what do you need to add to your sales job to incorporate more of the buyer's journey into your routine and earlier than what you've been doing until now? First of all, it's vital to recognize the two distinct portions of the buyer's journey. The first one, and this is the most important one, to get the appropriate buy-in from the internal issues, the internal elements, the people, the policies, the relationships, the rules, the old vendors, the initiatives, the strategies, the history, to get appropriate buy-in from all these areas to be willing to make a change or a purchase. Because until they get the buy-in there, they cannot even consider making a change or a purchase. The last thing they do is to get the internal agreement as to which vendor and solution to choose. We've only been involved with the second portion of this journey, and that's only about 10%. We've missed 90%. This is where we've lost our sales. But with some new thinking and some new skills, it's possible to be involved way earlier. Let's take a look at the actions that the buyers have to accomplish to get the buy-in that they need to consider making a change. And I have a whole book that I wrote about this called Dirty Little Secrets, Why Buyers Can't Buy and Sellers Can't Sell. You may want to consider buying it because it explains all of this and it'll give you some clarity, I think. So what I'm going to be talking about here is a different kind of thinking and a different kind of conversation that you're going to have from the first moment you meet the prospect. And remember, I mean, I've written them down, but they're far more complex for the prospect than just making the solution choice or choosing a vendor, because they've got political and relationship stuff they have to deal with here. The very first thing they have to do is choose all of the relevant people to become part of the buying decision team. This is harder than it sounds for two reasons. First of all, the buyers don't know at the start who exactly should be included. I mean, think about this. If you're going to be selling your house and moving, you don't know before you begin all the people and problems you're going to have to contend with along the way. It's just not possible to know all this at the beginning. And hence their delayed sales cycle. Next, there's going to be so many political issues at play internally that are going to make choosing these players challenging. I recently had a coaching call with a very, very smart vice president of sales at a well-known tech company. He was going on an appointment to see the sales director and marketing manager to push his solution and give a presentation. We talked about all the team members that would probably need to be involved ultimately to be in place to make the decisions and handle the implementation of his technology once it was purchased. And he realized that there were several folks who needed to be on the buying decision team as well and that weren't going to be at this meeting. For example, the tech manager, who my client said would be really happy with his solution because they talked together already, but he'd still need to be on the buying decision team to help with the full range of decisions, to collaborate with his peers, and be part of the team decision, even though he didn't get along with all of them. So he was left out of the meeting, but he really needed to be there. And what about the training manager, who really would have to make sure the users learned the technology? Or what about a project manager? Someone had to be chosen to do that, to handle the implementation. And they had to choose an internal consultant as well, to help guide the entire process through the different business areas and personalities. The fact that only two of these people were going to be present at the meeting told me that they weren't ready yet to even think about implementation or moving forward, and that they didn't know what a change of this size would entail. So this first part of the buyer's decision journey is very revealing. By understanding where they're at now, you'll understand how far they've gotten in their thinking about bringing in a new solution. And at this point, it's far more important to understand this than to understand their needs. Because if they don't get this together, it doesn't matter what their needs are because they've got no ability to buy anything. So before you attempt to even get an appointment, sit down for 15 minutes and plot out all of the issues that the buyer has to handle internally before they can buy. So when you speak with them, you'll understand where they're at, and then you can help them figure out the rest. Remember, stay focused on getting all the buying decision team members aboard, not on your solution or their need, because until they do, they can't even start thinking about making a new choice for a solution. The next thing that has to happen is the buying decision team has to agree that a change is necessary. This is a hard one. Internal politics have a big piece here also. Who's talking to who? Why not? Who wants to take over somebody else's job? Who's quitting? Who's being fired? You'll never understand this piece, but you can help the buyer manage it from within by asking them what would need to happen for all of the necessary members of the team to be willing to work together in a way that would help design a route forward that everyone could buy into. Remember, they have to do this anyway, with you or without you. And the time it takes them to do this is the length of the sales cycle. You can sit and wait while they do it, or you can do it with them, but it's a different role and a different skill set than sales. The next thing they have to do is buyers have to do an internal search to understand all the policies and initiatives and rules that would be displaced in any change. Until they're able to mitigate the problems involved, they will take no action. Again, read my book, Dirty Little Secrets, that explains all this. The next thing, figure out how to incorporate the new with the old. Until they have a plan to do this, they're not going to buy anything. They need to understand the hows and the whats of some sort of an implementation before they can even think about making a purchase, because the fallout is massive if they don't. All of the appropriate departments and people must agree to do or learn or have something different from what they're already doing. The next thing is that they need to get agreement from all the stakeholders as to the best route to take, the type of solution, the criteria for a vendor. And they need to know exactly the parameters for budget, how the new solution will be incorporated with the old, how to replace the people who will be excluded, and so forth. Are you beginning to think change management yet? Because if we contain our relationship by thinking sales and needs, you won't even think strategically enough to help them, And you'll be mired in a lot of the things that technology is now doing, and you'll be left without the kinds of numbers you need to be meeting. 50% of salespeople are not meeting their quotas now, and this is why. If you can enter every prospecting dialogue by first thinking of helping them manage their internal buy-in issues, you'll be able to get onto the buying decision team. If you enter with a need or solution discussion, you'll not be trusted. Remember, you're probably entering early in their decision-making anyway, and they don't need all your data yet. And they don't even know all that they need from you or how to listen to what you're saying or who they need to bring in or who else would have to hear this. Not to mention that you could be positioning your presentation directly in relationship to how they need to make a buying decision, not just what they need to eventually buy. I want to give you a little caution here. Understanding is not possible at this end. You can understand their needs and how your solution fits, but you will never, ever understand the personal, political, strategic, human, relationship-based issues that they have to handle before they get to needing you, because these are all very private, and you know what? They don't understand them either, but you can help them. Let's go beyond sales. Let's let technology handle the simple stuff. Let's make ourselves true trusted advisors and help buyers make the decisions they need to address before they need to choose a solution or a vendor. And we'll be trusted members of the decision team from the start. And you won't have to worry about price issues or differentiation. Buying facilitation is a model that handles all this change management stuff we've been talking about here. This model will give you skills to help the buyer go from piece to piece to piece with facilitative questions down the natural decision sequencing that brains take when they make decisions. It'll teach them how to collaborate. It'll teach them how to make new choices. It'll teach them how to manage buy-in. Go to newsalesparadigm.com or sharondrewmorgan.com and do some reading and go buy Dirty Little Secrets on Amazon. In the meantime, I have a facilitative question for you to help you decide if it's time to add a new skill to the one you're already using for the sales part of your job. What would you need to know or believe differently to be willing to add a new skill set in front of your sales process to help buyers go through this? Thanks. Thanks for listening. This is Sharon Drew Morgan, and contact me on my email address if you want to have a further chat. Sharon Drew at newsalesparadigm.com. Thanks.